This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa, I'll guide you home with my lighthouse.
Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On this show, I've talked about many things that can be done to treat a mental illness. On today's show, I want to look at some of the things that cause mental illness, how you can protect your friends and your family from these in the first place. So when we think about some of the causes of mental illness, we might think about things like alcohol and drugs, for example. And you might think that this would be a major cause. However, what we've found is that in the last 20 years, for example, young people have been using drugs and alcohol less and less. There was a big study in New Zealand called the Youth 2000 Study, and they did this study every couple of years. They asked a group of young people things about, you know, how happy do you feel, how stressed are you, do you use alcohol and drugs? And from the year 2000 to the year 2012, they found that drug and alcohol rates amongst teenagers had halved. And so some people would think that surely if drug and alcohol rates have halved, that means that rates of mental illness must have halved. Unfortunately, that's not necessarily the case. Generally speaking, mental illness has risen sharply. Probably there have been two significant spikes since the year 2007 and 2013. Now, some people say, well, how do we know that this is really growing? How do we know that there isn't just more awareness of that? And so we talk about more of it and that we find out more about it, but maybe these rates have always been there. Well, there have been standardized questions that throughout the world we've been asking young people since the 1950s. Things like, when you wake up in the morning, do you feel really stressed? Well, in the 1960s, roughly 15, 16, maybe 17% of young people said they woke up feeling stressed or overwhelmed. Today, most young people report that they do. In fact, probably 75% of young people do. So when researchers say that they think this is increasing, this is not just based on a hunch. This is based on very solid evidence that actually there's a high chance that this really is increasing and we do have many problems. Right, now I want to go back to alcohol for a second. You might ask, well, if drug and alcohol rates have been decreasing and mental illness has been increasing, how does that work? And I think one of the things we have to separate is a symptom of mental illness from a cause. So I think drug and alcohol is a symptom of mental illness. And so improving that and stopping young people using drugs and alcohol doesn't actually take away the root causes of some of this stuff. This one might surprise a lot of people, but I think healthy eating is also actually a symptom of mental illness, or unhealthy eating to be more precise, because we've found that generally speaking, despite what the media says, if you Google this, obesity rates have actually dropped by about 50% in the last 15 or 20 years. So actually young people are making healthier decisions in terms of what they eat. Unfortunately, that has not correlated with a decrease in mental illness. And I think one of the reasons is possibly unhealthy eating is a symptom of mental illness. So I'm not saying drugs and alcohol or bad eating we can ignore. Obviously, reducing these things, there's huge benefits to them. But in terms of some of the causes of mental illness, there's a few things that I want to look at. First of all, we need to understand, well, what is mental illness? Well, some people think that it's this random disease that catches people at random, and it really strikes people for no good reason. I don't believe that's the case at all. I believe when someone develops a mental illness, that's a sign that something's gone very wrong in that person's life, and something is really broken. Now, the first thing you might say is, well, doesn't that mean that people are really weak? Let's think about the Twin Towers. They were incredibly strong buildings. They had to withstand hundreds of tons of materials and people inside them. They were incredibly strong. And in fact, both towers actually stood up to a fully loaded plane full of fuel crashing into them. And they didn't fall down immediately after that. So those buildings were incredibly strong. Unfortunately, it was the fire that really caused the damage, and sometimes even really strong things break if you put them under too much pressure. And I think one of the reasons that we have such high rates of mental illness today is that, unfortunately, human beings are very, very strong, but they've been put under so much pressure that things are starting to break. And we'll look at some of these things. The first thing that I think could be a real cause of mental illness rather than a symptom of this is, for example, we know that the human brain is hardwired to be social. That is basically what most of our brain power is dedicated to, is thinking about other people. In fact, if your brain is not doing anything, even for half a second, your brain starts to think about other people and be social. So that is hardwired into us. So maybe when we start looking at some of the issues around mental illness, we need to ask, well, if the thing that we're supposed to do and our brains are hardwired for, if we're not getting that or that's not working effectively, maybe that could be a root cause of mental illness. I'll give you an example of this. For example, we know in the first 1,000 days of a child's life, research very strongly says the best thing that a child can have to grow and develop is face-to-face human contact. And one of the reasons that researchers think we might have growing rates of anxiety is that young people are spending less and less time with an adult. Some researchers think there's been a spike in mental illness rates since the year 2013, and that's when smartphones came out. And possibly that means that as human beings, we're spending less time face-to-face and more time on our phones. So if our brains are hardwired to be social, and if we need that to survive, and research recently has shown some incredible findings that if you want to live a long life, the best thing that you can do is actually have close relationships with people. It's not just the number of friends that you have, but it's the depth of connection. And research shows that, generally speaking, people with stronger connections live longer. This has been backed up by many, many studies. So the best thing that we can have is connections. And unfortunately, I think the rates of skyrocketing mental illness in the world show that basically we do not have the thing that we really need, and that is connection. So certainly we know that the first 1,000 days of a child's life are incredibly important. Basically what happens is the human brain is born with a lot of extra connections, neurons that it doesn't need. And in the first 1,000 days, the brain decides which ones are really important and which ones aren't so important. And so if a child doesn't have as much face-to-face contact, some of those neurons that are associated with being social and connectedness don't grow and develop. Now, some people take this to the extreme and say, well, if you had a child and they didn't have much face-to-face contact in the first 1,000 days, that means they're screwed for life. That is not the case at all. The field that I love the most has got to be neuroscience, and that's an incredibly hopeful field, because the best thing that we've discovered is that the brain is not fixed. The brain can grow, change, and develop. And we call this neuroplasticity. Neuro meaning the brain, and plasticity coming from the root word, plasticine. And if you think about plasticine, it's something that you can mold, you can change, you can make it into different shapes. And so we're now starting to find that, you know, even if someone has had a rough start at life, doesn't necessarily mean that they're doomed or anything like that. Might take a bit of extra time, they might need a lot of extra help, but actually over time they can heal this. So I think that's the first thing that's probably gone wrong in terms of a root cause of mental illness, is that children are spending less and less time with people and more time with devices. And so it's absolutely vital that we allow children to spend as much time with people as we possibly can. On last week's show, I talked about some amazing books. One of the books that I mentioned was Free to Learn by Peter Gray. And this book talks about the lack of free play with a lot of children. And many children today, they don't have much freedom. There's less and less time that they spend with other children. And much of the play today is designed by adults. There's this idea that adults have that you don't want to let young people be by themselves. You have to organize their play all the time. Everything has to be very regimented and structured. And research shows that, unfortunately, this is actually not a good idea. There have been some fascinating studies that have been done with rats, and basically researchers have stopped young rats having free play. And what they've found is that those rats become more aggressive and more anxious. And if you think about the world that many young people live in today, unfortunately it's filled with very aggressive and often anxious young people. Just as a side note, I should point out there is a very strong link between fear and aggression. You might expect that if someone's very fearful, they'll look nervous, they'll shake, and they'll be very timid. But when people become fearful, your brain activates the fight, flight, faint or freeze mechanism. And that fight mechanism is what makes people aggressive. So often if people are very fearful, actually a lot of people become aggressive. After the Christchurch earthquakes, Women's Refuge, for example, found they needed twice as many calls to their hotline as other times. And obviously people were very scared when it came to the earthquakes. So that is why there's a link between violence. So what I wanted to say was back to free play. So when people don't have this free play, lots of things start to go wrong, because instead of being able to form connections, as I said before, that's what we're hardwired to do. In free play, it's not a waste of time. Children learn to interact with one another. They have to learn to negotiate, they have to learn to discuss things, they have to learn to listen, they have to learn teamwork. And the best way is to do that, and not just with children of their own age, but with older and younger children. It requires a lot of brain power. And basically this book, Free to Learn, says that unfortunately children are having less and less free time, and things are very much more structured, and so they don't learn these vital skills. And if you grow up in a world where you don't know how to form connections with people, if you don't know how to negotiate, that's when a lot of things start to go wrong. And we're finding now there are huge rates of anxiety amongst a lot of young people. And I think one of the reasons is the world's a very scary place. You know, if you haven't learned how to navigate the world, if you haven't learned how to interact with people, then the world's a really scary place. If you don't understand what other people want or how to talk about your needs and your wants, it's a really difficult place. And so I think that's one of the reasons that there's such high rates of anxiety with a lot of young people, is they haven't had this opportunity for free play. We often think that it's far more important to teach really young children maths and learning and listen to Mozart so that they get a head start in life. Unfortunately, there's little evidence that says teaching young children maths in early stage matters. What really matters is human contact. So in the first 1,000 days, contact with an adult. But then as children start to grow up, they need to have free time with other children to negotiate, to learn how to manage situations. So I think the lack of free time and the lack of free play is a major factor behind some of the reasons that we have high rates of mental illness. Now again, if things have gone wrong, it doesn't mean to say that you can't do something about this. As I said, there's always hope. However, you don't learn negotiation skills by going to a lecture or reading books. The way that you learn this is by actually getting out and meeting other people. And so if things have gone wrong, you actually have to, I think people need to live this. It's not enough simply to say, read a book on this. And that can be a good start. It can give people some good pointers. But eventually people actually have to go out and they have to try some of these things themselves. So we've talked about the lack of face-to-face contact with children. We've talked about the lack of free play. I've done many, many episodes in Lighthouse of Hope over the last 3.5 years on trauma. I think trauma is a massive factor. I'm not going to go into that again on this episode. But just suffice to say that trauma is a major cause of mental illness. And the more research that's come out over the last 20 years, we are finding that trauma significantly impacts a person's development. A couple of weeks ago, we had so many good talks on, the impact of the shootings. We had Sharon from The Hive talking about Cambodia and the impact that had. We had Kate Scott talking about the WAVES program after suicide. So I've done a lot on trauma. One of the reasons that I want to say that it impacts people is, again, if we're hardwired to be social, in some way trauma usually disrupts our social life. You know, if we're abused, if we're neglected, if someone dies, if something goes wrong, that really disrupts our ability to be social. By that I mean when you're social, you like to think that good things are going to happen. And sometimes if you're hurt, that can give you the idea that everyone's going to hurt me, and some people withdraw. So if people have experienced significant trauma, it's really important that they get help for this. So I think trauma is a root cause of mental illness. And the final factor that I want to look at is sleep. There's a fantastic talk that's just come out by Matt Walker. He wrote a brilliant book called Why We Sleep. And if you just go to TED and Google Matt Walker Sleep, the talk is called Sleep is Like a Superpower. And it really shows how incredible sleep is. And in terms of well-being, we often think about exercise and eating well, and certainly those things are important. I'm not saying that they're not. But the one that I think is far, far more significant is sleep. And often sleep is neglected. In fact, often actually many people wear it as a badge of honour if they don't get enough sleep. You know, I only got 4 hours sleep last night and I still went to work. Often people treat that as a badge of honour. Well, we're finding that sleep is not a waste of time at all. Sleep is absolutely vital to our functioning. For about 100 years, scientists knew that if someone developed a mental illness such as depression, it would affect their sleep. So it was thought first came mental illness and then came sleep disruption. But recent research suggests that actually it's probably in many cases the other way around, that significant disruption and loss of sleep can trigger or exacerbate mental illness. And so if you are in a situation where you're not getting much sleep, unfortunately that significantly impacts on our well-being. So it is absolutely vital that we try and help people get as much sleep as we can. And we don't often make sleep a priority. We often treat sleep as something that, yeah, it's a luxury, and if you can get it, great. But if not, that's okay. If you're too busy, it's all right to sacrifice sleep. I recently met a group of young people, and these were very ordinary young people. And I asked them, you know, what's your life like? And tell me, you know, what's school like and how much work do you have? And many of these young people said, I go to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning and I wake up at 6 a.m. to get all my work done. Just think about that for a minute. 2 to 3 in the morning to 6, so at most they're probably getting 3 or 4 hours sleep. We know that teenagers need more sleep than adults. They probably need 9 or maybe 10 hours sleep. And it's actually a myth that some people need less sleep. You know, we often say that, oh, there's lots of people that can survive on 4 hours sleep. Well, when we say survive on 4 hours sleep, what do we exactly mean? You can struggle through the day, but significant sleep loss puts you at a huge risk for mental illness, and it puts you at a huge risk for other health problems later on. Now, new parents, obviously, they will be sleep deprived, but this doesn't usually last too long in a child's life, so that is something to be aware of. And there are possibly things that can be done about that to try and get at least some sleep. So these are some of the things that I've talked about on today's show that are huge factors in what triggers mental illness. There are, of course, hundreds of others. I mean, every week there's a new study coming out saying this could be a trigger of mental illness, that could be a trigger of mental illness, and they may play a role. But the four things that I've mentioned, face-to-face contact in the first 1,000 days, free play, trauma, and sleep, those would be the big four that I would focus on. Of course, there are other things, but if you are a parent, or if you are someone that is working with children, you want them to do really well in life, certainly if you can focus on those things, that's important. Now, intriguingly, I didn't say, you know, having a great Facebook profile or having thousands of followers on Instagram. Unbelievably, those things are not particularly important. And having a whole lot of certificate of participations, certificates of participation because you entered a whole lot of races at school. Surprisingly, also things like that don't necessarily make a difference. So I really encourage you to think about all these things that can be done to really help people. And as I said before, if you've got a child and some of these things have gone very wrong in their life, that doesn't mean to say that things are going to be bad forever. As I said before, the human brain is changeable, it can grow and adapt. So there are many, many things that can be done to support people. Certainly counselling can be a great first option for some people, but there's also many other things. Volunteering in the community. So let's say that someone hasn't had much free play. They haven't learned how to work with people. They haven't learned how to negotiate. They haven't learned those social skills. You know, volunteering in the community where you've got to work with other people can be a fantastic way to learn some of those skills. And, you know, most volunteering organisations, it's a bit easier than the workplace. They don't expect people to be perfect. So that's a place where you can actually test out some of these things. So if things have gone wrong, there are lots of things you can do. That's all I have for this show. It's New Zealand Music Month, so I'd like to play Tomorrow by Golden Horse. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.
The fruit becomes wine, and the thought becomes the memory.